following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If anyone could see me in the studio, you'd know that I am so excited every time I hear that song. You are live with the second hour of The Conservative Voice on WWDB. If you would like to join the call, you can do so at 888-329-3306. We would love to hear from you. I am Aida Nestor in the studio. I have Gary Heasley in Ohio joining us, and we have Bobby Eberle from Texas, who hung over from the first half of his call so that we could talk to him some more. So thank you, Bobby, for sticking around.
Absolutely. That went too fast, right? We have to do more.
Honestly, every week we stress about making sure we have guests and what we're going to talk about. And then we get in here and the 2 hours flies by so fast. We barely hit everything we want to hit.
Yep. Yeah, that's what's fun about this. I mean, when we have a group like this, I mean, and you guys are fantastic. And it's so cool that we've got these perspectives from, you know, all around the country. And we get to talk about it, and hopefully we get to rally some people to come out these next couple weeks.
You know, there's been some interesting news. Actually, you know what? Gary had a message he wanted to read and share with us from last night, I think, right?
Well, I just want to follow up on that. We were talking about the math, and is Trump up 10? And that's my number, and he repeated it the other day. So I think he's clearly up 10. But this town hall we had last night, talking about all the support for Donald Trump down in the Philadelphia, Northeast Philadelphia area, was really a lot of fun. This morning I got a text from one of the women that was there. Her name is Mina Coral. She's a great patriot. And she says, my brother is a diehard Democrat. He just called me to say he's voting for Trump. And, you know, what you see here is more and more folks that have been talking to someone like Mina for the last couple of years who are finally saying, hey, you know what? You're right. Maybe it's time I vote for the policies and not for the party. Maybe it's time I vote for my community and not for some political affiliation. I have some brand loyalty I have to a group that's been really damaging them for decades now. It's exciting to see these kinds of transitions that people are beginning to come over. So I think it is a massive shift. It started at the beginning of the year. We could see it. It's going, I think, much faster now. And to your point, Bobby, a minute ago, none of this means we take anything for granted, right? I mean, you aren't, I don't think, down in Texas.
Oh, no, man. We are, like I said, we're the battle. U.S. News and World Report named us, Fort Bend County, like the top battleground county in the country. So not that Texas hinges upon it, but what we have in this county, it's so close. It could go either way. So it's really a good indicator of how people feel about this economy and this crime and this border situation. And also, you know, are we able to reach those people? And so, yeah, there's nothing being taken for granted here. There's just so much work to do.
You know, our audience is largely in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, some other states. But I think that they're outside of Texas is an image of Texas as a homogenous, patriotic, you know, bull riding, truck driving, gun toting kind of group. But what's going on in your county?
Well, it is. I mean, I love that image. Who doesn't, right? And just to let people know, I mean, next weekend we're going to have a big old patriotic Trump train around the county, and you know, I can't wait for that. But what would happen is we've got a large population of South Asians. And people moved from Houston out into the suburbs, and they took a lot of that liberal mindset with them. And so back when I was in Young Republicans leading the state, in the late 90s, there were counties outside of Houston that were all red. I mean, and there's a similar one in outside of Austin, similar one outside Dallas, mine outside of Houston. And now all of those are just fighting for their lives. And so when you win in Texas, like our governor, Greg Abbott, and all of the statewide officials, they're winning off a rural strategy, knowing that the cities aren't there. But the real focus is those suburban counties, because you can't do the rural strategy forever. You've got to have an investment in these counties and show that our message works. You know, our policies are the right ones, and that's what we're seeing. Unfortunately, it took 4 years of just really bad, you know, hey, let's put the leftists in charge, not right. just the Democrats, but the leftists in charge, and let's see how things come out, right? And people are like, what the hell is this? You know, and again, it transcends regular Democrat and Republican. And there's a lot of people on the Democrat side that are freaked out. And that's why one of the messages, just let me add this, that we're putting is we're not asking at this point in time, right, 2024 in our county, we're not asking you to be Republican. We're asking you this time around to vote Republican. You know, if you're not ready to embrace that title, you know, after years of growing up in a Hindu family or a Muslim family that has that Democrat label, if you're not ready for that yet, just take a look around at the Democrats, because again, the Democrats in Fort Bend County are so corrupt and such a mess, and we see the leftists nationwide, that vote for change. Vote to get them out of there, and then give us a chance. See what the our policies are like when we're governing, and that's really kind of what we're pushing, because like you said, your friend that's going to lifelong Democrat voting for Trump this time around, I think you are seeing a realignment of really policies that help the middle class, help the steel workers and pipe fitters, and put America first. And that's what, for me, conservatism is all about.
It's interesting because I took the red pill around 2017, and it was a rapid fire experience from then on. And I would share the information I had with whoever followed me or whoever I was in conversations with, and I would try to tell them the truth about our current government and the things that were going on, the things that maybe weren't as true as we thought they were, and, you know, to open their eyes and maybe help them take that red pill too to further their own knowledge personally. And we get to 2020 and we see what happens, and January 2021 comes around. And there's a real feeling of maybe it had to be this way. Maybe they had to see what they would do with that power, because me telling them what they would do surely was not convincing enough. So unfortunately, now people are suffering. And I think especially in Philadelphia, and they said it last night at the town hall, our guests, they are seeing what happened over the last 3 to 4 years. This was not as bad 4 years ago, 5 years ago. They see the difference. So it's palpable. It's real. They walk through it every day. So maybe it just had to be this way. Maybe we really needed to see what they would do with power in order to allow people to see the opposite side as maybe not the enemy at this point.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's a great point, because We've seen this. You know, the left has been infiltrating education for decades now, you know, half a century or more. And so we've all known that's been going on as conservatives and as activists, you know, in the media. So we've talked about that. But again, I think when there was this feeling, among the radical left that, oh my gosh, we took down Trump. We took him down. We were able to censor news stories, and we were able to take this guy down. And so they thought that this was like an establishment. This is their communist regime, and they can do anything. And they forgot about we the people. And so, yeah, maybe so. Maybe it had to get to this point for people to actually wake up, because that's the thing about, you know, this republic that we live in, or you know, freedom in general, is that you're free to do other things.
Right.
You're free to focus your mind on living your life. But man, you take that focus and you put it toward defending your freedom. And now we're talking some revolutionary type times, and people, there's just no stopping that. When you fight for freedom, when you focus on that, it's just a whole different movement.
A lot of leftists talk about the pending civil war, that there's going to be a civil war, that we are itching for a civil war. But I'll tell you, if there's going to be a second of any kind of war in America on American shores, it's going to be a revolutionary war, because I am not at war with my neighbors who are misinformed and not really aware of what reality is because they get all their news from MSNBC, right? Like, I'm not mad at them for not knowing better. I'm disappointed they haven't branched out, but like, they just don't know what they don't know. So, you know, this idea that we're at war with each other is nonsense. The government wants everyone to think that we hate each other, because in reality, if we all came together and stood up against the government, it would be over in 2 days. It would be so fast. So I think that we're in a period of time where the United States of America and the people who live here need to make a decision on what we want our future to be. And it is that serious now. We have seen the result of the last 3 years and know exactly what they'll do if they get another four. And I don't think Elon Musk is exaggerating when he says if we lose this election, it will be the last one. As I said last week, you can vote yourself into communism, but you have to shoot your way out. So here we are.
Absolutely. Right. And one of the things, I mean, that we saw over these last 4 years, I mean, we could use like the economy, or we can use the border, because I really like your example. I mean, I talk to people the same way, friends and relatives, that you just kind of shake your head. I don't hate them. I'm not, you know, mad at them, but just disappointed that they fall for the rhetoric.
Right.
But what happened again with this overstepping of the radical left is that, you know, a Democrat's, an everyday average American Democrat's wallet, the same as a Republican. And when they're trying to buy food, the costs are the same. And as a Democrat to Republican, and they feel the pinch. You know, they feel that, whether it's energy, whether it's food, whether it's transportation or housing, you know, they feel that. On the border, you know, when all these migrants are being shipped to towns all over, when you've got Chicago Democrats complaining, you know, about where their money is.
Yep.
It really just opens everybody's eyes. And these were the people, like you said, that would wake up and just listen to NPR or MSNBC. Well, now here, you can turn that off for a second. And the reality is, I can't afford my groceries. And we've got leftists and radicals pushing migrants into hotels.
Yeah.
And using city services that we pay for, and no one is liking that.
Right. Now, you know, hitting on the economic issues is obviously one of the biggest movers here. But you touched on something a moment ago when you talked about the Hindu and Muslim populations from India and Pakistan that are a big part of Fort Bend County's population. And for people here to understand, Fort Bend County right now is about 916,000 people, roughly, right? Population. It's a big county, and it's immediately adjacent to Houston, to Harris County, Texas. So, you know, and people may not understand that Harris County, Texas is controlled by Democrats. The city of Houston is controlled by Democrats, and the lead county commissioner, called a county judge in Texas, in Fort Bend County, is also a Democrat. Now, he's having some unique challenges right now because he's run into the age-old problem in modern America, which is that racism is always in greater demand than supply. I think is that the right thing, Bobby, that's going on there?
That is exactly what's going on. And they pull out this race card and they try to use it because they don't have anything else, one. And two, they know how effective it is. And, but again, when people open their eyes, and for people that don't followed the story, this county judge made big news by putting a collage of social media posts together that he said he received that were racist, telling him to go home, and he blamed Republicans. Turns out he faked them. He sent them to himself.
Isn't that always the way? If there was so much racism as they purport, why do they have to fake it so often? Another Jussie Smollett, huh?
Exactly. And his chief of staff is now a candidate this cycle, and he did the same thing. And that's what brought attention to all of this. So those two are both indicted. We just had a protest, and they continue, guys, to play this race card. Another Democrat official, a sitting judge in Fort Bend County, just last week at a forum, this was to a predominantly black audience, she got up there and she told the audience, Republicans, this is her quote, Republicans from top to bottom, when they say they are tough on crime, what that means is locking up as many black people as possible. That's what she told the audience.
Wow.
And it's on video. And I just hammered that one. And she's getting a lot of negative press. We're actually filing an ethics complaint because judges are partisan. They're Republican or Democrat. But once you're elected, you really have to put the partisanship to the side. And they're very sensitive about that. So we're filing an ethics complaint against her for this blatant racism. But they do it over and over again. And here's a county that's so diverse. And we need to unite, and that's the message that we've been doing. And every chance they get, they try to put that wedge in there, put that division in there, just for political gain.
So, exactly. Now, there's another interesting twist here as I see it, and I haven't heard anybody talk about this, but I'm guessing I'd like to understand your thoughts. So this guy, this county judge, which is in Texas what they call the sort of chairman or president of the county commissioners group,
If you have a mayor and school board, the mayor and city council, it's like that of the county, the kind of the mayor of the county.
Okay.
Yep.
So this guy is I think he's Indian in descent. Is that right? Indian ethnicity? He has been extraordinarily focused on promoting sort of the whole sexuality agenda, totally focused on pride and advancing this this marketing of homosexuality. Now, here's the problem. In the Hindu and Pakistani Muslim in the Indian and Pakistani Muslim and Hindu population, at least as far as I've known people in that world, they're all very conservative. And they don't really want their children to be groomed. If somebody's gay, they're gay, but there's really not a reason for schools and government to be pushing it and promoting it, which is what he's been doing. So, have you seen a rift in that community that's opened up then the chance to have the kind of shift that we talked about last night in Northeast Philadelphia? Are you seeing that in that community where they're saying, listen, I just can't follow this radical sexuality-driven agenda?
Yes, absolutely. Because, and here's the thing, right? If you're doing national polling or issues polling, We see what people say, right? They say the border, the economy, crime, and everything. But if you go lower and you look at what motivates the emotion, you start talking with these people and they're talking about boys on girls sports teams or boys and girls locker rooms. These kind of issues just drive these communities crazy because they're conservative in nature, and yet this guy, KP George, this Democrat, he keeps pushing, these pride days and on all of this stuff into communities that they got to know aren't going to accept it. But again, that's where the left is just so bankrupt morally and philosophically. It's all about interest groups and everything and not a unifying set of policies. I always crack up. I go to an example that I saw, I think it was a couple of years ago, when the Christian Bakers in Colorado and other cases, right? The left's
the
going
cake.
After them and everything.
Yeah.
Right. The cake, the Bakers. Well, there was one case in Dearborn, Michigan, but it was a Muslim baker. And so they're like, oh, you know, they're short circuiting because it's like, do we stand with the Muslims or do we stand with the gays? I don't know. It does not compute. And they don't make a story about that. They just push it aside because, you know, now you got interest groups in conflict with each other. And it was just hilarious that they don't have just a unifying philosophy that says this is what we believe. It's always pitting one interest group against the oppressor, right?
Yeah.
And we have two supposedly oppressed groups, then they just short circuit.
Honestly, yeah, I've been more surprised that the Muslim community has not taken a stronger stance, especially in regards to sex changes on minors. I mean, that's how far we've gone from rational, right, normal thinking and behavior. And so I know that you know, the media has done a very good job of essentially saying it's not happening and these people are all transphobic, but it is happening. And I thought that we would hear more from our Muslim neighbors because it is important. Yeah. And there's no way that you can look at what's happened to the Democrat Party, especially in regards to these progressive ideas and missions, and not say that it's a religion to them. It is a full-on ideology. They removed God and replaced it with whatever this is.
Exactly. And as soon as you do that, as soon as you remove God from the equation, then what you get is this, I don't even know what you describe, demonic perversion, and that has no limits. And going after children to permanently, you know, sterilize and disfigure them, knowing that their minds are still developing, is barbaric. And this is what they do. I mean, they just had a story in the news 2 days ago, I believe, about Seattle Children's Hospital, I think, that was ranked as the most of these gender mutilation surgeries performed over the last couple of years. And it's these left-wing bastions that push it. And thankfully, this is a personal pet peeve of mine, that there are not enough physicians standing up,
right,
speaking out against what is so blatantly wrong and harmful to children. Some are, but there needs to be a whole lot more.
On that, if anyone wants to take a look at their state and what their state's doing, you can go to stoptheharmdatabase.com. It was recently released this week and updated. You know, for Pennsylvania, unfortunately, we have 822 total sex change patients, 316 total surgery patients, 518 total hormone and puberty blocker patients, over 3,000 prescriptions written, and over $6 million in submitted charges for this butchering, for this absolute travesty that's being carried out on children. I don't know a single person who became what they wanted to be when they were 13 years old, right? When you're 13, you want to be a ballet dancer or a fireman or a cop, and you get to be an adult and you go, maybe not, I'll do something else, right? And yet we're performing irreversible treatments on these children. And, you know, Texas, I know that you guys placed a limit on it, but even Texas's numbers, total submitted charges actually exceed Pennsylvania in Texas. So there's a lot of really good information on Stop the Harm, and people should definitely check it out. I know the media says it's not happening. I am called a transphobe probably once a week. I don't care, honestly. These are children. Mm-hmm. We don't touch children. You don't mess with children, okay? You leave the children alone. So that was the line for me. Again, I'm really shocked that more people aren't standing up, especially when you're getting medical billing that prove it. We're not talking, you know, one whistleblower coming out and saying this is happening. We're talking medical billing from insurance companies as well as the state. So it's happening. And I think people really need to take a principled stand on that because these are our children.
Right, right. Exactly. And there's a major controversy you mentioned in Texas.
Yeah.
With some whistleblowing medical officials.
Yes.
Saying, because the hospitals are saying, no, we're not doing this. And in reality, they are.
Yep.
And these physicians coming forward, and I think some nurses too, they're the ones getting the heat. They're the ones that the establishment's coming down on. And again, how can you do that when we're when we're talking about children.
But I think Frankenstein. Like, I think this is
exactly
depraved. How can you perform a sex change surgery on a child? Oof. And I know that the parents have been sold a bad bill of goods in terms of what they're told to proceed with these treatments, both pharmaceutically and surgically. But I think at this point, we all need to really make our voices heard on this topic, especially because we're dealing with a bunch of people who think we're overpopulated, right? We're dealing with a bunch of people who think there are too many people on Earth. So how do they solve that problem? Well, they push poison in medicine or vaccine form, maybe, some people believe.
Or food.
Yep, or poison our food. They perform abortions, you know, by the thousands. They are now sterilizing children. Well, you won't have to worry about them reproducing later, will you, if you sterilize them when they're 11? So the fact that this is not, that this is even a fight, that I get called names for this position is mind-blowing to me because it seems like something that should have been really rational and no one should have been arguing about. But apparently this is a full-on fight in our society today, and it's happening even in the most conservative places like Texas.
And I think, and that's why, you know, you see more and more talk from these leftists, both as public officials and media, talking about the problems of the Constitution and the, because this agenda is so radical and everything. If you had honest discussion, open discussion, people could see that for themselves. So rather than getting rid of these barbaric policies, they just want to get rid of the discussion of the barbaric policy.
Right.
And and keep them in place.
And the average American would never believe that what we're saying right now is actually true. The average American thinks that there's a cultural, an ethical, a moral, and a legal barrier to what we're saying is happening. But the average American also doesn't know that the Department of Health and Human Services just reported they've lost 320,000 children who were trafficked into this country by cartels, handed to HHS. HHS then somehow distributed them out across the country and has no idea where they are. We know, again, we've talked about child sex trafficking on the show a lot because it's one of America's greatest sins right now. I mean, I just can't imagine this.
Real-time slavery.
Letting it happen.
Yeah, sex slavery.
Right.
It's happening right now.
Right now. And these kids are being abused as we speak, and Health and Human Services was a vital link in the supply chain. Now, you go out and say that to Joe and Jane Main Street, and they're going to say you're crazy. There is no way that the government, the federal government's involved in this. But if you look, and we talked about this before, Bobby, if you look at this report that Senator Chuck Grassley did maybe a month and a half ago, he came out and said HHS is a critical link in the supply chain of trafficking children with the cartel. It's documented. Mm-hmm. Whistleblowers have exposed it. It's been reported publicly. And yet Joe and Jane Main Street would still believe that's not possible in this great country.
And, you know, interesting.
Right, because it's just so extreme.
Interestingly, Bobby, O'Keefe Media Group, James O'Keefe, actually just came out with line in the sand. They have whistleblowers from HHS. They are talking about the trafficking and the facilitating that the government is doing. So just if anyone doesn't believe that this is happening, there is a new embedded documentary, Line in the Sand, and it's out now.
That's good because it needs to. And there was a story the other day about, you know, these 320,000, you know, they get handed over to people that they know are not related to them.
Yeah. Cartel
no
members.
Relation. You
yeah.
know, there's no link. And they say, okay, here we go. And they just hand them over. And so that's, it's either, you know, it's only one of two things, just the idiocy of epic proportions or complicity in a scheme, and this trafficking is just, again, it's just so sad and so barbaric, and people need to realize that yes, this can happen and it is happening, and it's not hyperbole. It's not, you know, you guys looking for clicks, right? It's
right.
Really going on, and people just need to be aware of that.
Yes. And if you go back to the years of the Trump administration, that was the only time in the modern period, if you will, the last six presidents, that there was a concerted effort to stop child trafficking. And I don't mean the one-off thing where they spent 20 hours luring a guy into a room somewhere. I'm talking about somebody going after industrial-scale child trafficking. And Trump did that. He did it with the U.S. Marshals Service. And the only way I could keep track of it was to go to the U.S. Marshals Service website and read their press releases, because it was never in the media. It was only in their press releases.
Well, and if you'll remember, during that period of time, Trump and HHS, DHS, rolled out the genetic testing to make sure that these people were related to the adults they were coming across the border with. And if you recall, the Democrats and progressives threw quite a fit at the idea that they might identify these children as not related to the parents supposedly bringing them across the border. You know, it was back during the period of time where they were finding the discarded clothing, young children clothing all along the route there. So we've known that this has been going on for years, and yet it's just been exacerbated over the last 3 years by far.
It is just amazing what we're facing. And, you know, I talked about, again, last night at the town hall, the 25 ways the nation is at war with itself. It is shocking. The conversations we're having right now seem so extreme and extraordinary that they just don't seem real. So how do we stop it? What can we do to turn this around? There's a really simple thing. We've got to get every single person we can think will vote for America to the polls. It's not okay to sit back and say, hey, listen, looks like Trump's up. I'm sitting this one out. It doesn't matter if you're in a red state. We need to get everybody there. It doesn't matter if you think your state will be easily won, like Texas or Ohio. We got to get everybody out to the polls, because we need to get as many votes in there as we can. And in the very, very crucial states like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and others, we did make certain that we have so many people voting that the criminal element is unable to overcome it with cheating, because the cheat in Pennsylvania is now well documented. There's evidence in court now that has finally made it in. There is a mountain of evidence of this. The voter rolls in Pennsylvania are a disaster. They're intentionally kept in a way that has a lot of folks in there that aren't actually eligible electors. And we've got to overcome all that. So we need everybody to get out and vote. Now, my preference is that we vote in person. We implemented, Bobby,
same.
In 2019, they implemented, the Republicans created mail-in ballots in Pennsylvania for reasons that are, you know, we can only guess at. But
the guess is Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also because of a desire to centralize elections and get rid of the importance of the committee and the county committees, you know, the precinct committee and the county committee.
True.
But the idea that we have to get everybody out in person, listen, if you can't make it, if you can't vote in person, okay, well, then vote by mail, vote absentee.
Sure.
But the most secure way to vote, and the way that gives them the least amount of time to react to your vote, is to vote in person. If you have a mail-in ballot, you could take it with you to the ballot, to the precinct, and have them spoil it and then vote in person, right? And they will discard it. But if you have voted by mail, or someone votes in your name by mail, then when you go to the poll, you'll be told you already voted, and you'll vote a provisional ballot. The mail-in ballot always takes precedent over the provisional ballot. So if somebody votes in your name, their vote will count and yours will not.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a broken system. So we need everybody to vote, preferably in person. If not in person, by mail. If you have a mail-in ballot and want to vote in person, take it to the polls and hand it over unopened and have them destroy it and then vote in person. But it's a two-fisted punch here we have to have this year. We have to have outstandingly incredible turnout, and we have to have as much fight against election fraud as we can have. Now, just to quickly hit this one, to that end, there are people across the county, elected officials and individual citizens, that are now going to county governments and challenging ballots, because in our state, we're allowed to do that. There's a cost associated with it, but we're able to go challenge ballots. So there are records in the voter rolls that have been identified as people who used to live in Pennsylvania but moved, or are registered in more than one county and still voting in more than one county. Those ballots may be challenged this year. That is a critical element of fighting election fraud, because obviously if you live in Texas and Louisiana, you can't be voting in Pennsylvania. So
That's right.
So there's a lot of work being done by a lot of people to try to tighten that noose, tighten that net on election fraud, and that's a critical element. But anybody that doesn't get out to vote for their country this year, to vote for Trump, to vote for the American candidate, anybody who doesn't do that is signing away their children's future. And quite frankly, at the pace at which these radical lunatics are moving in federal office, they're signing away their own future. You know, we're not going to get out of this thing unscathed already. And if they get four more years, we're done. It never reverts back. And that's going to affect people who are just sitting here saying, well, listen, I'm retired and I'm comfortable. Or, gee, I'm accumulating a big 401k. I'm doing okay. You know, it's going to get you too.
Or I'd rather keep up with the Joneses. I'd rather keep up with the Joneses and don't want to lose my friends because they would be pretty upset if I stood with Trump or whatever it is.
Yeah. This is war, and it's time for us all to get in the battle and fight. And, you know, the great news out of Fort Bend County is that not only are you guys doing that, but you've transitioned, I think, to a much more policy-driven Republican Party in Fort Bend and other counties in Texas, I think, and in the legislature for sure. I think that's true. Is that right, Bobby?
Yeah, we're doing it. We cleaned out a lot of, wayward incumbents this last time around. We're looking forward to January.
Bobby, the theater I've seen over the last year or two, some of that theater came from Texas when I watched the, was it an impeachment hearing? What exactly happened in Texas with, and it was Dale Phelan, is that his name? He was an
He's the Speaker of the House. And again, you know, Republicans control everything, but it becomes then, you know, and I've talked to a writer friend of mine, a columnist who he's moved to Missouri now, but he spent all of his political activity in Wyoming. And he'll tell you the same kind of thing in these so-called one-party states. There's really a lot of Democrats there that will, you know, infiltrate the Republican Party. And even more than that, this us versus them uniparty type, let's do some business deals that aren't necessarily along Republican lines. You've got a lot of that too. And so it comes to a head when you've got Republicans sticking up for conservative principles and then this coalition of Democrats and these weak Republicans that want to go in a different direction. And we really fought back on a lot of that. The impeachment was something that kind of galvanized the conservative Republicans. And it's not so much even the merits of the case, is that how the case was brought up in a very backroom, not Democratic way at all. And so Republicans that actually defended that process, they lost. And because it was so bad. And so now we're coming together and we're fighting hard. And man, I just hope we can win, because there's just so much at stake right now.
It's interesting that you said that the Democrats infiltrated the Republican Party, because I made that comment last night about the Republican Party in Pennsylvania and think that happened quite a long time ago, and we're seeing the effects of that today. But my impression, so that's an interesting perspective, because obviously I watched this, play out from Pennsylvania. So different states, different experiences. It felt to me like it was almost an establishment versus America First. You're in Texas, so I don't want to offend anyone there, but, you know, the Bushes against essentially the America First side of things. Is that not, was it really more the Democrats versus the Democrat infiltrators?
Well, I tend to fall on the kind of the establishment versus the America First type of setting as well. You just see a lot of that. And this is why, I guess, you know, democracy in
Oh, it looks like we just lost Bobby there. He just fell off. Yeah, he is not on the line. He drove into a dead zone. Oh. But the timing on this couldn't be better, because right now we can actually just bring Joel Griffith right in to switch from the inner party fighting in Texas to what's going on with our economy. Joel, are you there?
I am here. Thank you.
Yay. Welcome to the show. Gary is in Ohio. We are pulling this off magically today. Thank you for calling in for us.
Happy to be on. Thank you.
So tell me, what are you seeing this week? I've heard some different stories in terms of what happened with the rate cut and what we're seeing now.
Yeah, well, we saw the Fed lower its target rate by 0.5%, just about a week and a half ago. Mm-hmm. But we also had some inflation numbers that came in this week. The CPI, which is the core price index, it came in lower than where it's been in recent years, but it's still tracking at above that 2% annual target. And the same holds true for what they call the core inflation rate. That's what you get when you up the more volatile items like food and energy. That's still tracking at around 3.5%, which is also above the Federal Reserve's 2% annual target. And all of this suggests the Fed has been too eager to cut rates. They really should still be hiking rates, not easing them. And I think we're going to be in for some more surprises in the coming year, especially if oil begins to rebound. You know, we've seen oil prices actually plunge over the past year or so. We're in a bear market in oil, and that's given us some relief at the gas pump. But if those prices end up edging back up, that's going to have a ripple effect throughout the rest of the economy, of course.
You know, Joel, you just said a whole bunch of things there. Let me try to pick this apart a little bit.
You just said a whole bunch of things. Sorry, that was just funny.
On. Yeah, there was a lot in there. You know, that was, So you said we're in this bear market for energy and oil prices have plummeted. Has that been driven by some kind of magic government policy? Because all the government policies we've seen since the Democrats seized power seem to be designed to make prices go up. Why are energy prices lower?
Well, energy prices are lower because we are producing at near all-time record highs. And, despite what some of the conventional wisdom is, during the Biden administration, we actually have been breaking all-time record highs in terms of oil output, and that has helped reduce prices. We've also seen oil come back online from places like Iran, for instance, which is now exporting more oil. And we've seen demand mitigated somewhat with a weak Chinese economy. So like any other good or service, if you get increased supply and that's outpacing the growth in demand, the prices come down. Now, I don't believe that Biden and Harris deserve credit for this record production. We know that government does not produce the oil and gas. It's the private sector, and the continued boom in our energy sector is in spite of the best efforts of the current administration to restrict the growth of our fossil fuel industry.
Right. So when you think about how this energy market works, oil and gas, now the way we drill here domestically, you put a rig out in the field, the rig can drill maybe one hole, maybe five holes, and they go down and then they'll turn 90 degrees and go 10,000 feet out or 7,000 feet out. I mean, it's a totally different technology. But when you think about the implications of what's happened over the last couple of years, when prices went up, oil wells that were not finished were taken to completion, meaning they could be used, right? They might have been drilled to keep a lease, but they maybe weren't tapped, if you will. And then you've got wells that had to be refracked, and there's no reason to refrack a well if the market's weak. But with prices in north of $70, north of $80, north of $85, every oil and gas well in the United States makes huge amounts of money if it's pumping. So you go in and you refrack and you take wells to completion. But when you look toward the future, the wells they're refracking now and taking to completion were probably drilled more than 2 years ago, maybe even more than 4 years ago. But right now, when you look at the rig count, the number of rigs in the field drilling holes, it's at 586. 586, by historical standards, is a very small number. It's down 36 month over month. I'm sorry, year over year, it's down 36. But that year ago, it was down like 100 and it was like 750 2 years ago. It's been steadily marching down. So the question I guess we have is, can we continue to produce large amounts of oil and gas domestically if we aren't drilling new holes?
Well, look, longer term, of course, we're going to need more exploration. But right now, this has really been largely a private sector decision to rein back on some of these drilling and some of these rigs, because prices are down close to 50% the past 2 years in terms of dollars per barrel of oil. I mean, natural gas prices are near all-time lows right now. So it's made some projects not nearly as profitable. And look, a lot of these companies are holding out for higher prices. And look, I'm not obviously not trying to give credit to the Biden administration on this. We know that just back in early on in the administration, they tried to put large numbers, actually 80% of all federal acres, they were trying to put off limits for oil and gas. And thankfully, we have the rule of law in this country, and companies and others are able to fight this through the courts. And some of the worst of those decisions have been undone, not because the Biden administration wanted to, but because they were forced to.
Right.
So, long term, I'm confident we can keep winning in the courts. But what would be even better is to have an administration that would signal to investors that they can actually earn a profit long term on these projects. Because to your point about the drilling of new wells, look, if you're an investor and you're looking to place your billions of dollars somewhere, the last thing you want is to put it into exploration and drilling on a project that might get shut down before you're even able to regain your sunk cost.
Right. Quite a risky venture at that point, right?
It absolutely is. And the signals are important. Look, we're going to be okay this next year or so. The signals long term, I'm very troubled by when you see an administration that continues to put us on this path to what they call net zero, net carbon emissions. It's such a foolish thing to think that we can go ahead and hamper our energy sector and think that our middle class can still remain prosperous. You have to have affordable, abundant energy to remain prosperous. And when they talk about how we can replace all this renewable energy, it takes economic resources to construct these needless windmills and needless solar panels. Every dollar of capital, every man hour of labor to construct this could go elsewhere in our economy, but they're intent on diverting it into an energy sector that could provide ample abundant energy as it is now if we would just get the government out of it.
Get them out of it. That's right. We don't expect the government to be driving these investments. And when they do things like increasing regulatory burden, increasing the fees that are charged for energy produced on federal land, all of that just passes right through to the people. It's not like, if you increase the cost, as Biden did in his first few minutes in office, right? If you increase the cost of pumping oil and gas, it's not like the companies eat that. It's not a tax to the companies. They just pass it along in their cost structure, and consumers pay more for energy. I just don't think people understand that so much. So that's a really good point. We're going to run short on time. So I want to move to this other thing you said. Go ahead, Joel. Go ahead.
I just want to add one quick thing here. Despite the fact that these prices have been coming down because of the big boost of supply, I think a lot of us notice in some states that gas prices are still up substantially from where they were a few years ago, and electricity costs continue to rise. So we have to keep in mind that it's not just a matter of what the barrel of gas or that quantity, barrel of oil, quantity of natural gas is trading on the open market. We've got transportation costs that are involved. We've got the mix that different states require the components to have with ethanol, for instance. So in many of these instances, we have government that's artificially driving up the cost of electricity into our homes and gas into our tank because of all the regulations they put in place after that oil and gas is actually extracted. And for that, the Biden administration does bear quite a bit of blame.
That's right. And the other thing, though, I just want to hit real quick while I have time. The reduction in interest rates didn't turn into a reduction in yields, did it?
No, absolutely not. And that's, I was talking to some friends in the mortgage industry, and a lot of folks that had locked in a mortgage rate about a month ago, they're like calling in saying, hey, we want that rate lowered by half a point. The Fed lowered rates. Well, the market had already priced in a decline in that interest rate. By the time the Fed lowered the rates by half a percentage point, mortgage rates had already fallen by more than half a percentage point in the following month. And like you said, we've actually seen now the yields on debt increasing by close to half of 1% after the Fed lowered the rate. And that's because since the since over the past week and a half, we've actually gotten economic data, including the inflation numbers, that suggest, wow, this inflation battle is not over. And so the prospects for future steep Fed interest rates declines have actually weakened over just the past week and a half.
So I've been arguing, as you know this, because we've had this conversation before, I think we all are arguing that you're never going to beat inflation as long as the government is spending trillions of dollars it doesn't take in and wasting that money on projects that are inefficient, projects that really aren't the role of government. It's not government's job to go build charging stations for electric cars. That's not the role of government. Look in the Constitution. It's not like in Clause 704, right? So if you look at this incredible spending, the counter to that spending is the Fed continue to raise rates. Now, that has an immediate impact on the consumer. We've seen that, and that slowed. Now they pull rates back. That didn't cause the inflation because it was too quick. They happened simultaneously. The inflation was already coming. It's still here, right? It isn't like they raised rates and immediately inflation picked up. What you're seeing is a lagging estimate of inflation. So they're saying, hey, look, inflation was up, then we lowered rates. Am I right about this, or am I missing the point?
No, you're right. And what the Fed is trying to do here is, you know, the fear that rates are left too high, that people are going to be deterred from borrowing money to spend or borrowing money to build a business. So they're trying to calibrate this right. But we all know that, you know, our money that's on deposit at the bank, it's not in a vault. If the rates come down, people are going to be encouraged to borrow more, to spend more, and those dollars multiply over time. And that's why, you know, I'm not so sure the Fed has this right. I think they've made a mistake in trying to unleash more of this money from the banks.
And we only have a few minutes left, but what could be the results of such a mistake?
Well, the results are more of what we've had the last few years. And we've seen the dollar lose 25% of its value, pretty close to it. And we know that our incomes have not kept up. So the typical family's lost around $4,000 in buying power over the past 3.5 years. Families that were already struggling to put away $3,000 or $4,000 in a retirement account, they're finding they don't have those resources to invest for the future. If we see another stretch of what we experienced in the next 4 years, that means you're going to see more and more people not just pulling back on investments for the retirement savings, you're going to see more people pulling out more credit card loans and home equity lines of credit just to pay their family bills.
And we saw an increase in the credit card debt over the last 3 years that we hadn't seen in a while, right?
You're right. We saw around a $4,000 per family increase in credit card debt. And if you combine that increase in the typical credit card debt along with the increase in interest rates on that debt to around 21% annually, families now are spending around $1,000 more per year annually just on the interest on the credit card debt.
The other side of this that I'm curious about, we have about 3 minutes, is the risk of a recession or an exacerbation of job loss. In Pennsylvania, they're required to notify the government if there is going to be a layoff of a certain amount, and then that's publicized and put out publicly here. I've seen that increase. We heard people at our town hall last night. One guy said that a third of his team had been let go. So we're seeing a little bit more of the layoffs creeping in. Is there a risk for that to kind of blow up?
Well, there's definitely a risk here. And, you know, I like to always look at those annual changes in jobs numbers. And we know, though, the top line numbers of jobs being created, we've actually lost around 500,000 full-time jobs over the past year.
Yeah.
So this could up. And look, even the Republican nominee, he proposed to put in place widespread tariffs. And if those were to go in effect, that actually would have a ripple effect through the economy and result in job losses across a number of sectors. And then the other candidate on the left, the Democrat candidate, has proposed these enormous increases in taxes on entrepreneurs and on investors. And that will surely lead to job losses. So, you know, I know we're all probably exhausted by politics, but politics and policy are very important, especially as we come at the end of this 4-year term where we've seen inflation, we've seen the jobs market stagnating, cannot afford job losses and price hikes.
And that is the perfect way to end the show this afternoon.
Thank you, Joel.
Thank you, Joel, for calling in. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to WWDB, the conservative voice. We will see you next week with a big show for you.